From the World Newsroom in Boston, I'm Patrick Cox, and this is The World in Words, number 7. In today's podcast, the language of comedy. High comedy, low comedy, Russian comedy, German comedy. Also, one Finnish word that sparked a singing phenomenon.
As a free man, I take pride in the word, Ich bin ein Violina.
Si se puede, is right. Yes, we can.
There are known knowns. There are things we know that we know.
Як шамаш?
Thanks, Borat. And thanks, too, to Hillary Clinton, who's been mangling her Spanish on this and the previous 6 editions of The World in Words. It may soon be time to say goodbye to Hillary in her Spanish. Then again, it may not. The World is a co-production of the BBC World Service, Public Radio International, and WGBH in Boston. You can find out more about the show, including how to subscribe to all of our podcasts, by going to theworld.org. So, jokes. And where else to start but with Germans? Germans, of course, are usually the punchline of jokes, especially British jokes. But this past week, a German newspaper got its revenge, sort of. The paper was incensed after a court ordered a refund be paid to a British man whose vacation on a Greek island was spoiled by the presence of Germans. Pretty much everyone staying at the hotel on this island was German. The entertainment, the activities, they were all in German. This British tourist couldn't join in because he didn't speak German. So he went to court and got some of his money back. After someone at the German newspaper Bild saw this story, the paper published a summer vacation guide for its readers with just one goal: how to avoid vacationing Brits. Well, that's worth a belly laugh, isn't it? Okay, so German humor doesn't always translate that fantastically. And to be honest, it hasn't actually been a huge hit among Germans either. However, a few years ago, in 2002, Germany did appear to discover its funny bone. Here's a story I did back then.
Did you hear the one about the German stand-up comedian?
Good evening. How many engineers does it take to change a light bulb? None, if manufactured correctly.
Germans don't do comedy.
Thank you. I'll be here all the week.
Schädel beer. Becks. The best of what Germans do best.
Becks started running that ad here in the US 3 years ago. It may have been a breakthrough. Here were Germans making jokes about their inability to make jokes. By playing on the stereotype, they were trying to banish it. And what a stereotype. A whole people perceived as ponderous, leaden, serious, power mad, and most of all, humorless.
I wonder why Germans are not very well known for their sense of humor. I think we are so freaking funny.
Well, that's what Gertz Otto thinks anyway. Otto's an actor who performed in a comedy broadcast on German TV this week. A comedy about the Nazis. No big deal, you may think. It's not like it hasn't been done before. Just ask Mel Brooks or John Cleese. But actually, it hasn't been done before in Germany. Germans just didn't dress up like Nazis for fun. Until now, Gertz Otto.
The Nazis were human beings, and like every human being, has a funny side. I mean, those people more or less were wackos, and there are a lot of strange and funny situations. Nobody else, apart from the Germans, have a problem with that.
With its creepy music, the made-for-TV movie called Goebbels and Geduldig doesn't sound like much of a rib tickler. But the Trading Places storyline soon kicks in when Nazi propaganda minister Joseph Goebbels visits a prison. There he comes upon his spitting image, a Jewish prisoner called Geduldig. In a mix-up, Goebbels is thrown into a cell, while his Jewish double dons a Nazi uniform and speaks to the frenzied masses at Nuremberg.
I regard Germans making fun of Germans as something that was bound to happen. It's just, of course, that it's taken half a century longer for them to get to it than it took the rest of the world.
That's Ted Cohen, a philosopher at the University of Chicago and the author of a book called Jokes. Cohen is serious about humor, especially humor that deals with atrocities. It may have taken the Germans a long time to laugh about their Nazi past, says Cohen, but for Germans, just like for us, laughter is necessary.
I was asked a little over a year ago if I thought there were going to be any humor about the September 11th disaster in New York City. And I found the question just senseless, because the answer was, of course there will be. Humorous responses are so deep a part of humanity that they are always going to occur, and even with regard to the most dreadful things. So I am not surprised that this is happening in Germany. And of course, it's a way of getting a little relief from what must be an almost unbelievably burdensome history that these people grew up with.
The bad news for Germans is that not many of them thought Goebbels and Geduldig was funny. In a poll taken before the broadcast, 59% of those questioned said a comedy about Goebbels was inappropriate. And then came the reviews. Here's one. A comedy must be humorous. On that score, this movie is a tragedy. For laughs now, the Germans can fall back on spoofing today's leaders.
Das ja wohl mal der Hammer, Leute. Kaum braucht man von euch mal ein bisschen Kies für Vetter Staat, schon ist man beliebt wie Fußpilz.
German Chancellor Gerhard Schröder is the target of scorn in this song, currently topping the German charts. His sin is raising taxes, a far cry from the Third Reich, but it's humor of a sort. The lyrics sung by a Schröder sound-alike go, you just ask for a tiny contribution to the state's coffers, and whammo, you're as popular as athlete's foot. If German humor still gets a little lost in translation, philosopher Ted Cohen says we should acknowledge the threshold that Germans crossed this week, when millions of them sat down in front of their TV screens and watched a group of their own countrymen make fun of Germany's darkest, most evil hour. Cohen says, hats off to the Germans for turning this corner.
If they can do it, then more power to them. Although saying more power to the Germans is never a really advisable thing to do. Excuse me, I had a little lapse there.
And so it goes. It just seems all too easy for Germans to be the butt of the joke and not the ones telling it. For The World, I'm Patrick Cox.
So, on to jokes from other parts of the world. Remember that hilarious country, the Soviet Union? Here's former KGB agent Oleg Gordievsky with a classic Soviet-era joke.
A cell in one of the numerous prisons in the Soviet Union, full of people who are convicted for really nobody knows what, and a new man is pushed in by the police. And they all rush to him to ask, How many years of prison have you received? And he said, 10. What for? For nothing. Oh, to you, liar. For nothing. They give 5 years.
Pretty dark, eh? It does seem that the more repressive the government, the darker the humor. So, dark humor thrived across the Soviet bloc during the Cold War. In Poland, in Romania, Ethiopia as well. Well, there's a new book out that suggests that the sudden collapse of the Soviet Empire in 1989 was due to humor, that it was mocked out of existence. This itself may be a joke. The book is called Hammer and Tickle, and the author is Ben Lewis. Here he is talking with the BBC's Edward Sturton about who exactly finds Soviet-era jokes funny.
If you're a historian, you tend to find those jokes really funny. But if you're not a historian, you tend to find them rather dry and dated. And some of my friends roll around the floor laughing when I tell these jokes, and other people look at me with a look of disgust and contempt on their face.
Do you want to try one on us?
Well, there were lots of these sort of prison jokes, and one of them was, who built the White Sea Canal? And the answer is, the left bank was built by people who told jokes, and the right bank was built by people who listened to them.
Do you think it made a real difference to the politics of the Soviet world?
Definitely, yeah. I mean, by the time you get to the 80s, the leadership are actually telling jokes. I mean, Gorbachev used to go round to meetings with Conservative Party officials and tell them communist jokes and say, look, this is why things have to change. So they'd, achieved a reputation of truth across the whole political spectrum by the 80s.
Even those figures we used to see lining up on Lenin's tomb, inspecting the vast array of forces available to the Soviet Empire as they paraded through Red Square, they were quietly giggling inside, weren't they?
And Gorbachev had a summit with Jaruzelski, and Gorbachev said, what's the economy like in Poland? And Jaruzelski says, well, we've got this joke in Poland, why are there always two people pushing every wheelbarrow? And the answer is because the third guy's off sick.
So it was a way of presenting an alternative view of what was happening, an alternative to the official view, in a world, of course, when you couldn't do that in magazines or on television or on radio.
Yeah, it was a way of spreading the truth. Yeah, it was a counterweight to the propaganda.
And I suppose quite a lot of the jokes that you have collected are a threatened species now, because the political point of making them has disappeared, and they will, if had you not performed this valuable work for history and collected them, they would have disappeared altogether.
Well, I think we should all embark on, you know, updating these jokes with some name changes. There's a great one that the Czechs told in 1968, which is, why is Czechoslovakia the most neutral country in the world? And the answer is, because it doesn't even interfere in its own internal affairs. You know, I think a few places in the world today we could kind of, you know, substitute the word Czechoslovakia, we'd be fine.
That's author Ben Lewis. By the way, did you hear during that interview all that paper rustling? And a chair, there was a chair that was creaking. And a woman was laughing. That, I think, was the co-host of the show that broadcast the interview. Anyway, all that noise really is part of the glory, the charm, I suppose, of the BBC. The BBC has a very different engineering ethic from public radio in the US. I'm guessing there were three microphones in that BBC studio, and the engineers kept them all hot, no matter who was speaking. That doesn't really explain why the BBC's flagship radio news show, the Today programme that aired this interview, that does not explain why they would have a chair in the studio that squeaks. Okay, onward to Finland. Now, you may or may not have heard about complaints choirs. You may even have participated in one. There are many complaints choirs these days. You can check a load of them out on YouTube. The story of how complaints choirs started comes down to one Finnish word. Here's a piece that I did for The World in late 2006. Talavo Kalanen is a Finnish video artist who lives in Helsinki. Some time ago, she and her German-born husband, Oliver, were talking about the nature of complaints, how everyone makes them, and no one likes to hear them.
And I just spontaneously got really excited, and I explained to Oliver that, you know, in Finnish vocabulary we have a word valituskuoro, which literally means complaints choir. And you use this in the situations where you feel everybody's just complaining, and you might say, oh, you are all like one big complaints choir. And so very, very quickly we got the idea that, hey, we should actually take this word very literally and make complaints choir.
Cullinan and her husband had been offered a residency at an arts institute in Birmingham, England. And so it was there that the first complaints choir was born. The artist placed ads in local papers inviting people to send in their complaints.
Birmingham has changed so much, I don't like it anymore. Birmingham has changed so much, I liked it more before. Recycling is token here, they do their very least. And if I keep on cycling here, I'm gonna be deceased.
The choir was formed by some of the people who responded to the ads. The gripes, like the quality of the singing voices, varied wildly from shoddy town planning to too expensive beer. The experience convinced Cullinan that she'd tapped into a deep-seated and universal need to complain, and to do it collectively. Next, she targeted Helsinki. You can't get rich by working, and love doesn't last forever. Those are the opening shots of a 6-minute ode to kvetching. Helsinki eclipsed Birmingham by the sheer magnitude of its complaints.
We had thought that maybe the maximum amount of people we can just handle, you know, in a workshop is maybe like 40 or something. Then we just started to get in more and more people, and finally we had 90 people. And of course it was our principle not to say no for anybody, so what can we do? And try to find a bigger rehearsal space than we had thought about.
We always lose to Sweden in hockey and the Eurovision Song Contest, they sing. Why does no one agree with me? And why does tram number 3 smell of urine? There are complaints about saunas, about the weather, about men who snore, women who complain,
TV, the dentist, sex lives, or a lack of them, and reference numbers. They're too long. Two other places have since got in on the act, a suburb of Hamburg, Germany, and St. Petersburg in Russia. Kalinin says the organizers in St. Petersburg were eager but cautious.
They loved the idea. They wanted to do it there. At the same time, they were really deeply afraid nobody will show up, because they told that, first of all, in Russia, everybody are so busy just surviving that they would never take part to anything just for the sake of that it might be fun or interesting.
As it turned out, more than 40 people showed up to sing about rude waitresses, alcoholic plumbers, and St. Petersburg's famed white knights that make it harder to see summer fireworks. The complaints choirs have got more than 500,000 hits on the video website YouTube. That spread the word, so much so that Talavo Kalinin is having trouble keeping up.
It seems this complaints choir concept has been taken really, really well around the world, and we are getting regularly these emails where people are either asking that wouldn't we come to make complaints choir in this and that country, but also we get emails from people who tell that, hey, we would like to just start our own complaints choir just without you. And we just thought that, hey, this is great. Like, what bigger can you create than a phenomenon which doesn't anymore need you, but which gives people a lot of joy and possibilities for self-reflection. So right now we are just waiting what happens.
On the Complaints Choir website, there are suggestions for new choir locations. Huntsville, Alabama, anyone? Pittsburgh, Paris. Meantime, there are plenty enough complaints from Finland, like, my friend likes his mobile phone more than he likes me. Also, my dreams are boring. And perhaps best of all, our ancestors could have picked a sunnier place to settle. For the world, I'm Patrick Cox, Helsinki. Talavo Kalinin and her husband Oliver have just been in New York City, by the way, helping to organize a complaints choir there. New York, you say? Complaints? Never. Well, they have managed to come up with some complaints. Rehearsals are underway, and the choir is going to perform publicly sometime later on this year. Also, if you happen to be in New York this summer, you'll be able to see video of some of the other complainers in Helsinki, Birmingham, St. Petersburg, and elsewhere. They're all going to be on show at the PS1 Contemporary Arts Center through September 15th. And in a future podcast, I'll have some updates from the New York choir, and we'll hear from Singapore, where a complaints choir performance was banned. Well, that's it for this edition of The World in Words. I'm Patrick Cox. Go to our website at theworld.org for more. Send me your comments. The address is language@pri.org. Also, if you're on Facebook, join the group, which, just like the podcast, is called The World in Words. I've just been informed by Facebook that one of my friends, a Bangladeshi reporter, now owns me as a pet. I don't know what to do with that information. Well, till next time, nakemin.